and gentlemen, welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out. We are back. It has been many, many moons, but I am glad to be with you again at this time. The show is coming back right now for any number of reasons. Obviously, one of the reasons I stepped away were time constraints, and it seems like the entire world is being told to stay inside their houses right now. So, since we are all inside of our houses, I figured it's time that we start having a conversation again. Obviously, I am very, very happy to be with you, but today I am not alone. I've got my best friend and producer, Kevin, on the line with us. Kevin, say hello.
Hey. Hello. It's been a while.
Yes, and so you're going to hear from both of us today. So right. Kevin and I have been going back and forth for a couple of weeks now about how to reintroduce the show. And one of the things that came up a lot, none of you can see what we look like. I'm white. Kevin is Asian.
A lot of us. I'm in the Seattle area, and obviously, you know, both of us are spending a lot more time at home right now because of this whole coronavirus thing. So in terms of the shaving and the and in the personal grooming department, not so much, not that up to date. So it's a good thing that you don't see us, actually.
So, and one of the things that Kevin has been dealing with, obviously, our president, who is still currently Donald Trump, I know I'm not breaking news here, but he never misses an opportunity to be a racist. And one of the things that he's done, so the trope has lived for a long time, that the reason that we need to do something about immigrants is because they're going to bring in diseases or something. And so when the coronavirus started in Wuhan, China, well, that was where the first cases were discovered. Who knows where it actually started, but we first noticed it in Wuhan, China. So this is his opportunity to go, hey, it's the China flu or the China virus or the Kung flu.
flu. Oh, God.
And okay. I was reading both in Time Magazine and in Newsweek the other day, both the online versions, that more and more Asian Americans are getting backlash because of that. So obviously, since I am not an Asian and cannot speak to that, I'm going to let Kevin give more of his perspective at this time, and then I would like to go ahead and add.
Well, I'm an Asian American, so I'll take my best shot here. It's actually a lot more complicated. That the racial politics of this is actually more complicated than just like us against them thing. So it's not a lot more complicated than just 1 + 1 = 2. So I am actually, I grew up in Hong Kong. So obviously, many months since June, July, I think a lot of listeners, and Melvin obviously knows, that a lot of things are going on in Hong Kong. There's a lot of protesting going on, and there's a huge police brutality thing going on. Everything was kind of slowing down a little bit right now. Although, you know, there's the Hong Kong police is kind of at it again. That's way, way too many things to get into what is going on and, you know, what's happening, what happened and what's happening over there in Hong Kong. But I am a little bit alarmed that a lot of, the people, even the people I know in Hong Kong and a lot of Asian Americans, and I like Chinese Americans, especially the people who are from Hong Kong, who are Americans now, they actually support Trump calling this a Chinese virus. And I think the whole problem with this is the situation and the implication and where the messages are coming from are way, way more complicated than just, this virus started from China. So today is Saturday. I'm sorry, Melvin, what day is it?
Saturday, March 21st.
I think yesterday. I think it's yesterday. I'm losing count. You know, after a couple of weeks of being home,
inside, yeah.
I'm kind of losing count. I'm losing count. Like what year this is? I mean, actually, what year this is a problem since the year 2000 anyway. But I am, of course, my TV is stuck on MSNBC. And whether that is good or not. But yeah, it's so they have all the morning White House briefing with Trump just like lying and talking all kinds of trash. And then with, you know, seeing Dr. Fauci on the background, I was like, oh, my God, what am I dealing with here? So I'm watching a lot of that. And I think a couple of days ago, there were a couple of reporters and journalists was asking Trump about, well, I mean, if you're using Chinese virus, isn't that kind of a racist thing? And I remember right after that, there was another reporter from OAN, I believe, is like One American Network.
Yeah.
Well, OAN is safe to say it's a right-wing outlet. Yeah. And she actually asked the question in this way. She said, well, is calling Chinese food racist? And I was like, oh my God, we are. Remember, hey, Melvin, remember this is like many years ago. There's a guy named Jeff Gannon from Talon News. This is way back in the W days. That Talon News is actually another, you know, right wing would be a little unfair, but it's a little, it's a right wing news outlet. And they planted Jeff Gannon there to ask W a question. I think I, you know, don't really 100% remember what the context is. And then after that, everybody starts finding out who this Jeff Gannon person is. You know, turn out he has a plan. I'm seeing the exact same thing going on right here. I think they were planting a person there to ask a question that end up would validate whatever Trump is actually saying. So we are in kind of a dangerous territory here. Because the complicated part about this is, yes, this virus originated in China. And, you know, since I grew up in Hong Kong, I have been tracing this thing since the very beginning. Because Hong Kong is they've been through SARS in 2003. So they know what, I mean, at least the people, the government is in an entire different story. But the people know exactly what is going on. They know exactly what need to be done. So they are on high alert there, like right away. So we have been tracking this thing since the very beginning. I think even if I remember correctly, even like back in December and definitely January when this thing was starting to get crazy in Wuhan. And the Chinese government is trying to cover this up from the very beginning. Yes, this originated in China, but whose fault is it that it got out of hand?
So what are
it's
the things-
not... Right. It's yeah. not the Chinese people.
No.
It's the Chinese government.
So I want to touch on a couple of things that you've mentioned. First of all, one of the things I don't know that a lot of people realize, because coronavirus has only really become our reality for about the last 2 weeks or so. And the reason why is because that is when the president finally decided to stop calling it a Democratic hoax to stop him from getting reelected. The reason it is called COVID-19 is because in the week between Christmas and New Year, that's when this was first discovered. So the thing that I thought was going to happen is I said, you know what, this thing that's happening in China, I think it might interrupt supply lines. And so we don't make a lot of things here in the USA. And I said, hey, I think in a couple months, you're going to see some interrupted supply lines. I was wrong. The virus actually made it here. And so when we say COVID-19, it only became a reality for people in March. Because up until then, the president was lying about it. And now, one of the things I want people to know is he's been sitting on this for months and months. Now, there's a handful of countries that have gotten a handle on the coronavirus. One of them is Vaux, Italy. I heard Rachel Maddow talk about this. I heard Clark Howard talk about this. And they said the only way to stop it. Now, what we're doing right now, all this social distancing, keeping people inside, keeping people out of the schools, that is okay. But it's not really what we need. The way they finally ground it to a halt in Vaux, Italy, is universal testing and then quarantining the people that have it. Life is still going on there. Weddings, concerts, people going to church. That stuff is still happening there because everyone that has the disease has been pulled out of society temporarily. But we don't have the tests here in the country because the president has decided that if we know how many people really have the test, you know, really have the disease, it's going to make him look bad. So everything that he's doing is self-serving. We're also, unfortunately for him, inside of an election year. Leading up to this virus, the president did not get in front of a lot of cameras and give press interviews, unless it was Fox or one of these other right-wing outlets. And now he's being forced to do that because he says he's put together this coronavirus task force, which is insane because the person leading up that task force is Vice President Mike Pence, the guy who doesn't believe in science, the guy who back when he was in Congress wrote an op-ed saying that cigarettes do not cause cancer. So this is the dude that's in charge. And so you can see the president starting to crack, starting to fall apart because he's like the dog that chases the car. Now that he's caught it, he doesn't really know what to do with it. So I forget who it was from NBC News that asked him either yesterday or the day before. Here's a leadership moment. Mr. President, here's a leadership moment. Now, it's not going to be the softball question that they asked you at OAN News, but I would like to give you an opportunity for a leadership moment, Mr. President. What would you like to say to Americans who are frightened right now? And he turns to the reporter and says, you are a terrible reporter. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you are afraid and you are sitting in your homes and you are low on toilet paper and you are low on food and you have no access to healthcare, just remember that that guy from NBC News is a terrible reporter, and then you can go on about the rest of your day.
Yeah, this is definitely not what good leadership should be looking like. It's funny because we're kind of, you know, both of us are news junkie. Peter Alexander.
So both
both of us are news junkies, but you know, at the time that we need to recall a name, we're like, huh?
I don't remember all the reporters' names.
I think MSNBC right after it, that Peter Alexander, and actually said that, you know, this is a softball question. It can't get easier than that. I can. You know what? Whatever. Call me whatever. But I can actually hear what Obama would say. I can even hear what W would say. Remember W with the loudspeaker in front of a World Trade Center?
Yeah.
In the rubble, you know, we all can hear you. You know, I can even picture what W would say to make everybody feel even a little bit better and safer. But not this guy, of course. Right. Of course not. Because all he has is thinking about himself. That's it. He's not thinking about us. He's not thinking about, like, Dr. Fauci. And then, you know, all the craziness with the drugs, what, you know, could be, maybe effective, who knows, what do we have to lose? That's not what good leadership should look like and sound like. Because, if you know, you are the president. You tweet something, some people will start doing it. And if that drug is not proven 100% and it's proved to be, you know, actually harmful to people, a lot of people are going to get hurt, you know?
Yeah.
And then Dr. Fauci on the background is like, well, we all see the meme now, right? Because he's like facepalming in life in real time. I feel for Dr. Fauci, because like he's a real scientist, he's a real doctor, he know what he's doing, he know what he's talking about, and yet he have to work according to this framework that, you know, and he has to, you know, bend certain things back,
right?
Like, you know, life on live TV. So you know, right now, you know, I know a lot of states are on a shelter. Is a shelter in place?
Yeah, California and New York City have both decided to shelter in place at this moment, and the governor of Oregon and Washington, the area that we live in, I'm more in the Portland area, you're more in the Seattle area, they are weighing their options right now about whether to do the shelter in place.
We're getting close. If not, we're already there. You know, I mean, a lot of, you know, just learning from how other countries and other places dealing with this. This is the correct second and third step. And then, you know, there are the testing, of course, is step number one. But, you know, obviously we kind of blew that, which is crazy because, you know, we're going to so easy go into another discussion about the medical system because, well, all these stuff, we should not be, you know, if we know this thing is coming a few months before, we shouldn't have any kind of shortage on anything. Really.
Right. Right. So one of the things that I think that we are learning, so there's a ton of lessons that I think people should take away from this, and first and foremost, and I was reminded of this by the governor of New York, is the reason we don't have enough respirators, the reason we don't have enough beds, is because we have a for-profit system. And if they have empty beds and unused respirators that they're not able to collect money from people on and make profit, then they're not going to have it. And so then we right. are not ready in this moment. I think the other thing that people are starting to realize is healthcare, your country is only as healthy as your sickest person. So the meme that was pushed for so long about one of the reasons that we need to keep immigrants out is because they're going to bring some disease with them. Hold up. Almost all travel is being cut off right now, and it's not because people are immigrating to the country with diseases. They're doing the same free kind of travel that we have always right. done. So this idea that if an immigrant from China or Mexico, wherever, comes to live here, that's what brings diseases. No. Human contact is what yeah. brings diseases, and then unprepared governments are what help spread those diseases.
Yeah, it's a virus. It doesn't really distinguish between, you know, how much taxes you pay. Or any other of those attributes.
Yeah,
you know, it just passes along, and it's science. This is all about science. It's not about what to believe or may or may not work or it's like hope. Well, the only hope is if you get the science going, then you will have you will be hopeful about that.
Okay.
But it's just amazing. It's just amazing what's just amazing. I mean, the morning White House breathing, what's going, just amazing to watch. And then, you know, amazing, not in a happy kind of way. You're like, you know, how far have we come to this, you know? So I just want to finish that thought about, you know, the Chinese virus.
Please.
So I think, to really, if we want to put a name on this virus, if we don't want to use what the WHO, that's another story, the WHO, probably need to look into it. But I think the Chinese government actually, there's a connection with the WHO. The WHO didn't call this a pandemic for a while because, you know, the Chinese government doesn't want it to. But, you know, COVID-19 name, if you don't want to call that, I think there's no easy name to actually call it. If you call it the Chinese virus, that means what? Anybody Asian, it's responsible for that now? The complicated part about this is a virus. This situation is created by the cover-up in the negligence of the Chinese government. If you have to explain it, you're going to spend some time to explain it. The whole Chinese virus thing, the name, it's very problematic. You know, it's not an easy thing to conceive, and it's not an easy thing to explain.
I prefer to refer to this as COVID-19, and I know it's not as cute as Corona or some of these other things that people are calling it, but I like to refer to it as COVID-19 because it highlights the failure in leadership, and I think that right. needs to not be forgotten. So since we have a failure in leadership, is it easy?
If I can just add one more piece of information. This is because this only go on in Hong Kong's Chinese media pretty much. So it wasn't. I think, you know, people around here wouldn't know about this. But so there was a professor in Hong Kong. It is Hong Kong University. Wrote an article about, you know, this whole situation, and in it, he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, and I do think there's an English translation out there, but he said something like, you know, he essentially, you know, blamed the Chinese government for, you know, for all the cover up and for, you know, the way how the Chinese government handled this thing. So now we got this entire, it becomes a worldwide problem. And he also said that the way that, you know, Chinese people treat the environment and animals, and, you know, they, you know, the eating of exotic meats, that need to stop, because, you know, this thing comes from Yeah, it's a big deal. So this thing, you know, this virus, you know, they trace it back. And I think if I read it correctly, this virus has actually come from exotic meat market in Wuhan.
Yes.
They were selling, you know, wild animals, not bats. I think the bat thing is kind of debunked, but they are, it could be. But, you know, but this virus actually came from a wildlife.
Okay.
And because, you know, in markets in China, they sell just exotic meat. So this thing jumped into human and, you know, now we are feeling
okay,
it.
Okay. So
so that professor wrote an article, and then it went out there within 24 hours. The professor withdrew the article and apologized. So that's the kind of authoritarian regime that we're dealing with. So
the doctor that initially discovered the disease and was going to be brought up on charges, who eventually died of the disease, was exonerated posthumously yesterday. So I do want to highlight definitely the meat thing for a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, neither me nor Kevin consume animal flesh, but that is not, and we're in different places on that, whereas for me, you know, I simply don't do it, but I don't proselytize about it. But Kevin might have a different outlook on that. But let's talk
a completely different series of a podcast.
Indeed, it is. Yeah. So, but let's talk about the meat thing for a moment. Now, it wasn't just the problem that it was. By the way, for all of you out there that think that it's a fabulous idea for us not to have any regulations and business should just be able to get to do whatever it wants, what this was. This was an open air market for selling the meat of animals that are not legal for consumption in China. So this was something that was happening outside of the government. Now, think about how the corrupt Chinese government, but even they said, you know what, these things probably shouldn't happen, but there's not a lot of oversight with those things. So these animals were not supposed to be killed, and they were. They were not supposed to be brought to market, and they were. And of course, when you're running something black market, there's no oversight. So if you love the idea about business not being regulated at all, this is one of the things that you have to look forward to. Now, I would love to tell every one of you to just stop eating meat, but at least with the USDA, these kinds of things don't happen all the time. But if you love your meat and you love it exotic, and you love it without any grubby government hands touching it, then this is what you are ultimately going to end up with. Because when you get rid of regulations, the only thing you're really getting rid of are consumer protections. And
yeah,
and the fact that go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about the way I think of it is, you know, the regulation, and especially in food and drugs. You know, the entities like USDA and FDA and stuff like this, we are overlaying oversight with using science over politics, because there has to be a level of science involved here, you know, in terms of food regulation. You know, people would get sick if you have less regulation, you have less inspection, and, you know, food, we're talking about food. When people consume food that are, you know, they're less, you know, they're not regulated correctly, people will get sick and people will die. And what is the thing that is actually keeping people from, you know, getting sick and die? It's really not the politics, it's the science. So the way I look at it is, you're using science to oversight politics. Oversee, is that the right word?
Yeah, you got it.
Right. So, you know, it's all about science. You know, the politics is just a tool. But at the end, science is actually the thing that will keep us all safe.
So in the face of a failure of leadership, it's pretty easy for a lot of us to just throw our hands up and go, you know what? The president failed. The Congress has failed. They don't seem to care about anybody but rich business owners. What I would like to say to folks is, although that may be true, those are your representatives. And don't forget, those are the people that you chose in your government. So obviously, elections have consequences. Consider that. Consider that for the next time that you're voting. And by the way, you get to consider that right effing now, because this is an election year. And even with the failure of leadership for these elected officials, I was reading in The Independent, there's about 50 different scientific groups right now, and all of them at the same time, and they're not competing against each other. They've all said, we want to find a vaccine for the coronavirus. We want to get it out there as fast as possible, and we don't care to make money on it, because this is going to be our gift to humanity. So although everything seems, and to some degree it is, at a complete standstill right now, just know that the science, as Kevin was just mentioning, the science is not failing us right now. The way that we—
No, absolutely not.
The way that we have put together vaccines in the past, because of what we've learned from those, we've been able to skip a lot of the steps in developing the COVID-19 vaccine. Getting a vaccine isn't going to stop it in the near future, because best case scenario, and this would be the fastest that one of these things ever got to market, the best case scenario is that we have this vaccine in the next 12 to 18 months. But you say, Melvin, I'm out of work right effing now. I'd like to go back to work. I understand all that. But once we have the vaccine, you know, we won't have to worry about at least this particular thing in the future. And a note on vaccines, and I'm in the Portland, Vancouver area, and not so much Portland, but definitely the Vancouver area is deeply conservative. And there are a lot of, you knew I was going to talk about this, anti-vaxxers that live in my area, and they're not quiet. They put signs in front of their houses, they put bumper stickers on their cars about how vaccines hurt people. But I promise you that if we had a COVID-19 vaccine right now, they're not going to take down their signs, they're not going to take their bumper stickers off their cars. They would quietly go and get that vaccine because they know that they're full of horse-ish right now. Because
right.
We've eradicated so many— science has eradicated so many diseases, and I think that this one will eventually be eradicated too, but we need to stop treating social media as a news source, and we need to stop listening to these dum-dums that tell us that we can't have vaccines because vaccines hurt us. Imagine
it's not,
look at your life right now. You know, look at your life and how interrupted it is. Now, you can't tell me that even if you're one of these nitwit anti-vaxxers that you wouldn't take that vaccine.
Anti-vaccine, the whole thing is not even a right or wrong thing. Because if you talk about right or wrong, then, you know, there is opinion involved. It's not even that. It's even more definite than that. It's the science.
Yes.
The science, that's it. I mean, it has proven it works. Now, 100%, no, because it's science. There's always possibilities. I mean, that's a wonderful thing about science, right?
Right.
You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like we're going to get into religion again. But, you know,
Kev.
You know, it's like, I believe, I don't believe, you know, it's not even about that. It's the science called the shot. And, you know, in vast majority of the cases, vaccine works great. So, you know, there's no right or wrong here. There's no opinion. I mean, it's not even an opinion thing. The numbers, it's there and you can check the numbers. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
And even if you are religious, it is okay to still believe in science. If you believe that God loves you, God wants you to be happy, and God wants you to live a full life, then it is okay to believe that he put scientists here, and that doesn't make them better than God for you. That just means that whatever you have to tell yourself, they're working for God. Fine. Right. For me, I believe that they're working for humanity. That's all I do. So right. when we do get the vaccine, I would really love to see not just this talk about, you know, how it vaccines hurt people and kill people and cause autism and all this. I would like to see those talks slow or completely die, because I think people are realizing we had a measles outbreak here in the Vancouver area. And the reason we had that is because there's so many people around here that decided not to get vaccines. And I remember when that happened, I remember how scary that was. And the hospital said the same thing that they're saying about COVID-19. They said, if you believe that you have it, do not come into the doctor's office because it spreads so fast. And they're saying the same thing about COVID-19 now. And there was one woman where all three of her children got it. And if you believe in miracles, and I know you do, a miraculous thing happened when all three of her children got it. She got them all vaccinated. You don't know what you have until it's gone. And I think more people are realizing that now.
The scary thing right now is because we don't have enough testing going on even just yet. So we don't know how many people are infected. So because a lot of people are infected that they didn't know they are infected, they're going to infect other people. They're going to like take less precaution and infect other people. So this is going to just go exponentially bad, you know, every day going forward. There is at least one positive that come out of this. When this is all over, hopefully, you know, we're looking at maybe a month or two. That's the best case scenario. The music's going to come back. The concert's going to come back. Theater's going to be packed with people. Restaurant is the one thing that I really worry about. But restaurants are going to come back. You know, all the other weddings going to go on. You know what will be gone? The negligence of us, you know, treating you know, they're thinking about, you know, viruses and, you know, pandemic and stuff like that. The negligence, the carelessness of us dealing with this will be gone. So that is a very good thing. So next time around, everybody will be like, hey, remember back in 2020, what? Remember, here comes 2027. And you know this thing's going to happen again. You know, and yes, should we dive into the whole climate change thing because we are like, you know, deforestation, you know, all these viruses are released into the world, blah, 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 blah. This thing is going to happen again. We had SARS in 2003, and then 17 years later, we have this thing. So, you know, this thing, this stuff's going to happen again and again and again. And you know what? Next time, guess what? We know how to deal with it. When something in the world, even somewhere in our country, this start happening, all of us would be like, okay, let's start, like, you know, making sure our supply chain is good. Let's make sure that we know exactly what to do. And the leadership, hopefully, at that time, would be like, okay, we know exactly what, like, you know, did you watch what Andrew Cuomo says the other day, you know, the control valves? You know, there are different steps, right? You know, like, you know, if this doesn't work, we go to, if the curve doesn't flatten, we go to the first valve, and then it doesn't flatten, we go to the second. And then they would have all that stuff lined up on a federal level. So we don't have to improvise when this thing is getting bad. We have to chase it because right now we're chasing it. We shouldn't be chasing this.
Right.
And yes, of course, you know, Trump, he got rid of the pandemic, the people who deal with pandemic in the White House, right? Created by, you know, the Obama administration after the swine flu, you know? So we should be chasing this. We should be like, get right in front because we do have a couple of months of warning.
I want to highlight that because that is definitely one – and I think a lot of media outlets are afraid of being considered too political or it's not a good time to go up against the president right now. But one of the things that I want people to understand if you don't already – and I think there's a lot that do, but it still bears repeating – The Obama administration did bring in a bunch of government scientists to respond to this very specific thing. And in a cost-cutting measure, in order to reduce the size of government so that it's small enough to drown it in a bathtub, Donald Trump
– Is it Grover Norquist?
It is. Yeah. Donald Trump fired all of those scientists in 2018 and never replaced them. And predictably – your government is now drowning in a bathtub. There's no two ways about the way I feel when it comes to politics. Now, I'm not going to tell you, you know, Democrats good, Republicans bad. But what I am going to say to you that when you are picking your leadership, and that's going to be the first line of defense. What we are down to right now, for me, in my opinion, is what we usually think of as sort of our last line of defense. fast food workers, grocery store workers. Those are the people right. that are on the front lines right now. And that's not how far down it should have gotten because of all of the things that should have stopped it before it got to that point. But when you were considering your leadership in the future, and if they get up and they start telling you that government is bad, they're telling you up front that they are going to do a piss poor job. Please do not hire them. If they're telling you that the science is still out on this. No, the science is not out on this. The science is in on this, and it's crystal clear. Okay, do not hire that person to be your representative, because what's going to happen when this comes around, and as Kevin mentioned, it will come around again. What's going to happen is you're going to find yourself back in the same spot, and you're all going to be spinning your heads, and you're going to go, how did this happen again? We have history lessons in order to learn from them. It's not just that it's fun to sit around and reminisce about this stuff. Nobody's reminiscing about wars or hunger or famine, but we need to learn these things, and the obvious reason why is so that we do not do these things again.
Yeah, this kind of panic really should not happen, and it cannot happen again. It's only if we have one positive that come out of this, it needs to be that we need to be completely prepared and know exactly what to do. And you look at countries like, you know, over there and, you know, South Korea, Taiwan. Taiwan is it's handling this very well. Hong Kong, of course.
Singapore,
they're handling this really well. So there are people in the world who know how to do this. Now, they may not be in this kind of scale because the United States is a lot, you know, in terms of like how many people we have and how many things that we have to deal with. Yeah, it's a lot more than what maybe Taiwan and Singapore has to deal with. But still, I mean, we have the resources. We have totally fine with, you know, enough resources to deal with this. So, yeah.
So what's being talked about now, and this concerns me a little bit, is how we're going to bail out business. So one of the things that I do that I decided to devote myself full time to when I walked away from this microphone is a small business. And in just the last couple of weeks, I've racked up several thousand dollars worth of losses. Like it was just immediate. And small businesses are obviously the ones that are going to be hit the hardest by this. So the Republicans in the Congress have decided. So it took forever for the coronavirus aid bill to come. So it was passed immediately in the House. It's full of your Democratic representatives. And then it stalls in the Senate. Why? Because Mitch McConnell immediately wants to start bailing out the airline industry and the cruise ship industry. Pause. Right. Let me say this about the cruise line industry. To my knowledge, and correct me if you know better, Kevin, there are no cruise lines that are incorporated here in America. They always they call themselves American companies, but they incorporate themselves outside of America so as to avoid taxes and any number of other things. And those are the people that your representatives are talking about bailing out. So they pass. So they're talking about, well, we're just going to pass this bill. We're going to start sending money to Americans. That's not necessarily going to work either. That's, again, a Band-Aid on a bullet wound.
And trickle down bailout doesn't work.
Also, printing money doesn't freaking work. So we've got enough money inside of our system right now. The thing that should happen to pay for this is those tax cuts. And I know that they were made permanent, those tax cuts that were immediately passed as soon as Trump got in and he got his favorable Congress. Those tax cuts should be reversed immediately. And then that is the money that should be handed to working people and small businesses. But what we're doing instead, and I heard Steve Mnuchin say this, and I shouldn't be surprised by this stuff anymore, but I am. He said, we will print as much money as it takes to hold up. This is always the complaint that I've heard from my conservative colleagues, is that we need to stop printing money. We need to stop running up debt. Well, now that Dum Dum's trying to get reelected, all of a sudden we're okay with printing money. And if you print money without anything to back it, including the full faith and credit of the federal government, all of you folks that are worried about having to go to the grocery store with a wheelbarrow full of worthless money in order to buy a loaf of bread, that's what you're walking yourself into if this is the answer. And believe me, hear me now, believe me later. If Donald Trump is reelected, that money will not be there. He's talking about bailing you out now because he needs your votes. And this isn't just people like me. This isn't just progressives or small business owners. This is everybody. If Donald Trump is reelected, he's not going to need anybody. And that includes the 59 million Trumpers that voted for him and have an undying allegiance to him. He's not going to, there will be no more rallies. There will be no more where he's going to, you know, he's going to fight abortion or any of these BS things that he says he believes in. Once he's reelected, he doesn't need you anymore either. I'm already not a supporter, but you will be left with your G's out in the wind as well. And I want people to get that inside of their head because, yeah, it seems like there's a lot of stops that are being pulled out right now in order to save you. It's not about saving you. It's about making sure that Donald Trump crosses the finish line so that once he gets there, he can turn around and give you the one-finger salute with both of his hands.
But I think he's in even worse shape now because he doesn't have the rallies to have a bunch of people and say yay in front of him anymore because they have to cancel all those, right?
He is suffering right now because he used to get in front of those yahoos and just I don't know if you've ever sat through one of these things. I did. I know. I usually used to just get the little sound bites and stuff, and I go no. What is it like watching one of these things from beginning to end? I would have rather had a root canal. And he does. He just really it's just one dumb thought to another, and everybody in the audience. So as soon as Donald Trump finishes a sentence and pulls his head away from the microphone, that's the signal for them to start slapping their fins together like a bunch of trained seals. And then he goes back up to the microphone, has another random ass thought, and then steps back. And then there goes the damn seal hands again. And there's a few locker ups and calling women fat pigs. And then he's off to. So he's going through hell right now. The fact that he doesn't get to get in front of these people, people in his administration has said that he needs this energy that he gets from these rallies. These rallies aren't about America or inspiring people. They're about feeding his own ego. And we're watching that ego die in real time right now. And without those rallies, I think he's just going to become even more unhinged. And who knows what's going to happen in the fall? It looks like Joe Biden's going to be the nominee. Almost certainly Joe Biden's going to be the nominee. And And whatever you think, and by the way, I'll say it, and Kevin knows, Biden is not my guy. And in my mind, and I know he was Obama's vice president, but in my mind, he's never been a good progressive. But what happens during times like these is people change, and they change because they have to change. Politicians are not good leaders, and we've established that. And we are not supposed to be fans of theirs, because when you're a fan of somebody, that means you're a fanatic. These people become infallible. And I think what's going to happen, and this is Joe's moment. This is Joe's moment to seize it. It's his moment to learn from it, and it's his moment to respond from it. When FDR ran for president, he didn't run on all of the things that he ended up doing. But what he ended up with at that time, he responded because he was a wealthy man too. He came into the office as a wealthy man. He was, you know, born a wealthy man, died a wealthy man. But he still ended up doing all of these really progressive things because that's what the times called for. So my hope for Joe Biden, I've never seen eye to eye with Joe on war. I've never seen eye to eye with Joe on healthcare, even now. But I'm watching the change happen with Biden because with the economy falling the way it is, I think when the jobs numbers come out here in about 2 weeks, we're going to be looking at like 5 or 6 million lost jobs. And that's in 1 month. And that's going to continue month after month after month. So Joe, now, when you're an incumbent president, the chances of you winning reelection are pretty damn solid. They're almost certain. They're almost guaranteed. But for one thing, the economy. And the economy is falling off a cliff right now. And people are losing their jobs by the millions. So Joe has an opportunity, and I know you can't hear me, Joe. Don't F this up. You don't get to lose. Because if you lose, you didn't just lose to the worst human being in the world. You lost when you had all of the headwinds that you needed to move you towards victory.
So, yeah, Biden wasn't my first choice either. I supported Bernie last time.
Yeah.
But I feel like there are, better options this time. So I actually supported Kamala Harris, and then she dropped out.
So,
and I supported Cory Booker, and then he dropped out. And then Liz, of course.
So I gave money to Kamala. I gave money to Cory. I gave money to Mayor Pete. I gave money to Elizabeth. And in my state, I actually voted for Elizabeth. And I think it's okay for Kevin if I out you right now. He did too. So we had other folks, but we realize now it's now time to band together, because during the primary, you fall in love. During the general, you fall in line.
Have you noticed, like, this week especially, both Bernie and Biden kind of stay away a little bit? They're not on TV. Making news all the time. And I think that's what real leadership looks like, because that's not the politics. The Democratic primary should not be the focus this week, because we're dealing with this thing that will kill anyone. So I think they're showing, both of them are showing real leadership by not, like, being the news. They're not going out there. I mean, so easy to, Trump tweets something, so easy to tweet back and make some news. Not doing that. They're staying away. They're letting the people who need to deal with this thing deal with this thing. They're letting the Gazzetti, they're letting the Andrew Cuomo, they're letting Jay Inslee, they're letting, Gavin Newsom, the people who actually have to deal with this thing, Dr. Fauci, deal with this thing. So I think you can, right there, you can see, in terms of leadership, either Bernie or Biden are light years ahead, parsecs ahead of Donald Trump there. So they're
both showing the level of leadership that Kevin and I have been talking about in the show. And I think at this point, even though they're not saying it outwardly, I don't think that there's any competition between them anymore, because I think they've realized 2020 is not just an election year. It's a huge issue year, and it's an issue that's bigger than both of them. I feel like there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes right now, and it's like talking behind our back or anything, but I think there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes right now where they're trying to figure out, because we don't want the same debacle that happened in 2016, where when Bernie didn't get the nomination, the Bernie people just threw their damn hands up and went home. No. And Bernie knows the kind of people that he has following him. Unfortunately, he's got a lot of fans, and Bernie has become a religion to any number of people. So I think the talks that are going on behind the scenes are exactly how to present the fact that Biden and Bernie are now working together, and why it's important that people put all those differences aside for the greater good. And it shouldn't take something like the coronavirus. I think if we had had the coronavirus in 2016, maybe it would have been able for people to pick a side. But that didn't happen. Old news, Amy, and all the rest. But I think that they're trying to figure out right now how to placate the Bernie people, how to make sure that they don't stay home, how to bring them into the fold and get them to – you don't have to love Joe Biden. As a matter of fact, you shouldn't love Joe Biden. You shouldn't love any of these pricks. But what you do need to do is you need to turn out and support them. Because I don't want to say that there's not a choice here, but there isn't. It's either the worst person in the world, or it's one of these Democratic nominees, or one of these Democratic candidates.
You're so right there, because isn't Donald Trump already the severe enough national security concern here?
His own people call him a national security risk.
Don't sleep a lot now during the night worrying about a lot of things.
All right, so what I've always practiced, or what I've practiced for a long time with this show, is as we wrap things up, and so Kevin, we're getting into sort of the last few moments. I say we got about another 5 or 8 minutes. What I like to do is I don't want to get on the mic and just complain and then say, go out there, everybody, and take my complaints and what I want to do is I want to leave people with some hope and with some positive thoughts.
You are the show, so I'm gonna just let you wrap it up at the end. How about that?
All right.
But I'm just gonna say, I think I just want to emphasize that the positive that will come out of this is it's going to be painful. And this is only the beginning, but it will be painful. The next few weeks to a month to maybe 2 months will be painful, but we will come out of this stronger because we will have the knowledge. We will know how to handle this, and we will have a reference point. So we would the next time we have to go through this, hopefully we won't have to go through this again because we know what to do to not have us go through this again. And just, you know, take care of each other. Check in on your neighbors. You know, practice the distant thing. It's not a joke. It's not like, you know, it's not spring break's over, people. So, you know, it's not a joke. You know, do whatever you can. Wash your hands. You know, just stay clean. And don't go buy all the toilet paper. It doesn't do anything. Take care of each other. You know, yeah, check in on the people, older folks who are proportionally more affected by this. Check in on them. And hopefully this is not a dumb thing to do, but I really, truly worry about the restaurants, the restaurant industry. So, you know, for those of us who are lucky enough to still are okay, doing fine, I think we should, I know in California, New York, and Washington, we don't dine in anymore. We're not allowed to dine in anymore. But a lot of places still do takeouts. Well, you know what? Do your regular thing. You know, if you dine out, you know, if you go out to eat, you know, once or twice or three times a week, do the same thing still. But, you know, just take out. Just support your local community, support your local restaurants by, you know, sharing what you have, lucky enough to still have. So, yeah, so that's what it is. But, yeah, it's time we grow and become less selfish, I think, you know. That would be if we come out of this with that kind of positiveness and goodwill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you know what? We will be a better country and we will be a better people on the other side.
With as busy as I've kept myself over the last number of years, I moved to this area in 2013. I've never really gotten to know my neighbors. And what I've done during this time, because some of my neighbors are older, is I went ahead to all of them. I went to the door and I said, hey, if you need me to go get you water, you need me to go get you food, you need me to go get you medicine, I said, don't even hesitate to ask. I'm here for you. Just come and ask me. I will jump in my vehicle and I will go. I will assume the risk so that you don't have to do that. What I found out in turn is I've got neighbors that make home remedies. I've got neighbors that grow food. I've got neighbors with chickens and they're now providing us with food. And so we're doing this. We're doing this whole share program in our neighborhood. And so that's one of the good things that I've seen come out of this. I don't want people to worry. I don't want people panic buying anymore, and I definitely don't want you sharing your photos of empty shelves and long lines on social media, because guess what? There is still enough for everybody. Our supply lines, with the exception of maybe the electronics that come from China, our supply lines have not yet been interrupted. But if you keep buying more toilet paper than you need, way more pasta than you need, and all these other things, those supply lines are going to be interrupted. And yeah, maybe you've got enough food to sit home for a month, but the person who can't get to the grocery store as willy-nilly and easily as you have, maybe they're going to have to go without. Maybe they're going to have to start going hungry. So calm your nerves. Stop buying so damn much. Don't worry about the dum-dums in Washington, D.C. There's still a lot of good people around you that are doing a lot of good work. And those are the people and no more do we get to do this crap after this is all over about these low-level workers who don't deserve to make anything more than minimum wage. What would the other thing that we've learned from this? There are no low-level workers. All work should come with dignity. And yeah, maybe you thought that the guy that worked at Jack in the Box, the guy that worked at Winco, was just some schmuck who probably doesn't even have – no. What you've learned now is how freaking important that they are.
Yeah.
And we've always taken them for granted.
Thank those people. You know, if you're going out now, you know, you're just getting coffee at the Starbucks. Thank those people who are still working for all of us. Just give them a, just say thank you. Janitors, Just say thank you. You know, yes, of course, you know, the emergency personnel and the medical personnel, absolutely. But, you know, just anybody who is still have to work, they still have to. I mean, a lot of us are lucky enough to be able to work from home, but a lot of people are not that lucky. So, you know, just give them a thank you.
And it's, and they're not going to think it's weird when you thank them. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for being here on the Fire You Can't Put Out. I want to thank Kevin for sitting into the show today. And I want to just let everybody know that the shows are going to become more regular again. Obviously, I'm at home a lot more these days. I've got at least 2 months until I do another DJ gig. Of course, what happens after that is going to be based on response. But for the time being, I'm back. And I'm glad to have you here. And I promise you, we're going to get through this and we're going to be better on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen,
yeah,
thank you for being here. And we'll catch up with you next week. See ya.